Oklahoma, what it is to be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Bidden and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Brian Clinton enthusiasts, people who are excited that OU Spring Ball is in 4 days. Sorry, I had to pause because I don't know. I can't math. I haven't taken math since high school. 4 days on Monday. People who are excited about that. This is the podcast for you. This is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and the Rivals Network. I am Jesse Crittenden, and I am joined, as always, by Sir Coach Esquire, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th, and 7th, Brian Clinton. Brian, are you good at math? Can you do math?
I'm okay. I wouldn't call myself proficient at math, but I took some math classes.
You're not a math magician?
I know some of these words.
I remember growing up, I could do like the flash card, like the time cards really well, like the, like up to 12, like the times tests. I could do those.
Yeah.
I couldn't do anything else.
I took AP calculus in high school and was, I mean, I'm good at math, I guess. I guess I haven't done it in a long time, but I could
see. You're one of those guys.
Pick it up a little bit. Yeah. I guess so.
Calculus guy.
I'm one of those guys.
Calculus.
Shout out Miss Hass. The Hasselhoff.
The Hasselhoff. Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
I like that. That's good. It makes it more fun to learn math from somebody that has a cool nickname. Yeah. That's cool. Brian, we're talking about math. I don't think either of us planned for that. Because we're here to talk about OU football. Just in case you didn't know that, I just wanted to remind you. We are talking about OU football not only because spring football is on Monday, or it starts on Monday, but yesterday was the annual marathon under Brent Venables of not only his press conference to preview spring ball, but we also talked to 34 newcomers. Talked to 34 newcomers yesterday, freshmen and transfer players. It was fun. It was great. It was a lot. Brent came in and talked for 40 minutes, and then we got to talk to 20 offensive players for a 40-minute session all at once, and then 14 defensive players all at once for another 40 minutes. It was a lot, but it was great, man. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but a lot of those guys were so great to talk to. Daniel Akinkume is my early candidate for best interview on the team. He was amazing. But I think we should start real quick by talking about a couple of the things that Brent mentioned in his press conference yesterday. And, you know, obviously the big news about his wife, Julie, being cancer-free is
awesome.
Incredible.
So cool.
Just incredible. Yeah, that's just great news. And for that to, and they've known for a few weeks, but the Oklahoman reported it yesterday before the press conference. Brent confirmed it. That's just, you know, it's just great. It's just great.
No, it's fantastic. That's like so many people that word is so heavy for so many people. Lots of people in my family, very heavy word. So for her to have beaten it and to be cancer free now it's awesome. Just prayers answered, and you know, praise God for that. It's really, really cool. Awesome stuff.
Absolutely. But you know, and then on the field, some more good news. Justin Harrington has received, or his waiver has been approved for a 7th year of eligibility. So he will be back next year. And on top of that, he and Andrel Anthony won't participate in the spring, but I was pretty surprised when Brent said he expects both those guys, barring any setbacks, to be a full go this summer.
Yeah.
And I think there were questions about, I mean, I think both those guys, how much time are they going to miss next year? When are they going to come back? Are they going to be at 100% when they come back? For them to be ready before even fall camp starts is humongous.
Yeah, that's like a testament to how well Oklahoma's, or how good Oklahoma's recovery team and how good that training staff is doing their job, and then just how far that has come just as a whole, like as in this sport. I mean, it doesn't seem like, I guess we were young or almost kids whenever you think about ACLs being something that a guy didn't come back for a full year. Like it wasn't you just didn't do that. And then you had like Adrian Petersons of the world that changed things. And then now, I mean, yeah, it's crazy. What is that? You had October would have been Andrel Anthony's. So here we are doing math again. So less than, you know, right around 9 months, and he's back. And then,
Arrington got hurt week two.
Yeah, it would have been September. So yeah, right around 8-9 months for those guys turnaround. That's crazy.
It is. And it's huge because, you know, not only are those guys veterans, but they'll be in the mix for significant playing time. Mm-hmm. And I think Justin Harrington is a really interesting thing to look at because we don't really know what his season would have been like last year. All we know is that it was headed in a good direction before he got hurt. And you look at this wide receiver room where Andrel Anthony was the leading receiver through the first 6 weeks of the year. And obviously you lose Drake Stoops, but I think that receiver room, you know, and Brent actually mentioned it yesterday. He said, this is the best Jahlil Farouk has ever looked, which I thought was interesting. He mentioned that Jaden Gibson hasn't lost a competition, you know, during winter workouts. So to me, I think those are potentially two starters that you've got returning during the summer, but specifically Harrington. Mm-hmm. What does that mean for this defense?
I think it's big because that's a guy that is, I don't want to say that Desaun McCullough or Kendall Dolby or Peyton Bowen aren't like the quintessential fit for a cheetah position. But I think in the same breath, I can say that I think Justin Harrington, frame, speed, all of that, I mean, he fits that mold better than any of those other guys do. It's a very specific position. And I think when Brent Venables or, you know, Zach Alley now, when those guys, when they have an athlete like that at their disposal that can play that position at an elite level, the entire defense rises. You know, to a lot of people, that versatility or that need to have that versatile guy might be a drawback, or, you know, if you don't have that guy, maybe your defense isn't as good as it could be. But I don't think people understand just how valuable it is to have somebody that can play both the role of a safety and a linebacker in the same body. That's just, it's so big. And so for Harrington to not only be back on the field, but to have a seventh year, I mean, think about how crazy that is that we're saying that now. You know, he's a seventh year of eligibility, fifth year at Oklahoma, I believe. So, you know, we haven't seen him really have an opportunity. It seems like every time that he gets rolling, it's been like a yearly thing, you know, spring and summer. Justin Harrington's looking really good. You know, he's promising. And last year that came to a pinnacle, and it was like, this is it. It's finally his time. Looks great through two games and hurts himself against SMU. And it, yeah, I don't know. I think it's huge for the defense. And, you know, just the added depth in that secondary and linebacker room is just incredible. You think about where this unit was, or where this defensive unit was, and where those position groups were when Brent Venables arrived, and where it is now. It's incredible what's happened in the back seven for this team. So yeah, to have a guy like that with all that experience coming back for another year, it's huge.
It is. And Brian, I think there's so many things that we can talk about with spring football starting on Monday. There's a couple things I really want to dive into. But before that, I believe you have something of a St. Paddy's Day message for all of our listeners out there. Would you like to do the honors?
I'll do it. Bear with me here. I'm going to get through this without laughing. Top of the morning to you. This episode is brought to you by the St. Patrick's Day Shamrock Shavers, Manscaped. This year, don't just chase rainbows. Make your own pot of gold and groom your little leprechaun with the leaders in the below-the-kilt care. Say goodbye to your clover forest with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and let your confidence shine bright. Embrace the luck of the Irish and join the 10 million men worldwide who've trusted Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use code ONTEXAS for 20% off and free shipping. Ever since I've used Manscaped, I can proudly say I found my pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And whether you're sculpting your beard or cleaning up your neckline, these are always the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ONTEXAS at Manscaped. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code ONTEXAS at manscaped.com. This St. Patrick's Day, make sure your little hairy leprechaun is luckier than ever with Manscaped.
Couldn't have said it any better.
You should have done that one. Like,
you called
thinking,
it.
I know. Thinking back on it now, though, like you have, like you kind of scream more. Like you've got the red hair look, and it would have been.
What are you getting at? I don't know what you're getting at.
It just would have. I think it would have hit better from you.
I disagree. I firmly disagree. Anyways, great ad read. Great job.
Manscaped,
good job. Brian, I thought it was pretty interesting. Brent was asked a really broad question about what position group needs to develop the most depth in the spring. And Brent said the obvious answer is the offensive line. And I think, you know, he touted a lot of the guys that they added through the portal and through, you know, the freshman recruiting class, but it's clear that's the focus. I mean, he said Bill Beedenbow, like that's what he's been tasked with, is he's got to develop options and depth there. When you lose Andrew Rame and Tyler Guyton and Walter Rouse and Caden Green, of course that's the task. It was really interesting. You know, I got to talk to Michael Tarquin and Daniel Akinkume yesterday. I kind of got to talk with, you know, I kind of got a one-on-one with Daniel yesterday. It was so cool to hear him talk about not only his experience of coming from, you know, from London, you know, to Norman, Oklahoma, how unique of a perspective that is. But he actually said, kind of unprompted, that he's excited for the spring because he feels like there's a chip on his shoulder that he doesn't belong, or that people think he doesn't belong here, or that he can't play here, and that coming from overseas is a barrier for him. And I thought that was really interesting. And I also think that's the kind of mentality and mindset that the guys on the offensive line are going to have, because that's the position group that's going to get knocked all during the spring, all during the summer, in fall camp, when national outlets talk about it, they're going to have question marks about the offensive line. Brian, what interests you or what intrigues you about this offensive line group? You know, it's kind of a mix of, you know, some guys that were on the team last year but haven't played a ton, mix of older experienced guys that have played a ton but not at OU, mm-hmm. completely raw freshman guys. What intrigues you about this offensive line?
Well, I think it's just that. There's this melting pot of talent and experience, but it's all new for the most part for Oklahoma. You know, outside of Jacob Sexton, you could throw Troy Everett in there. There's just not a lot of familiar faces for guys for the, you know, for media and fans to look at. And I do think that mentality that you talk about is important, because it is going to be there's going to be a preconception going into 2024 that the Oklahoma offensive line is where this all the pivot point for this team. The rest of the, you know, if you really look at the roster, I think you'd be hard pressed to not say that going into next year, every other position group outside of quarterback is probably in a better place now from a skill or talent perspective than it was last year outside of the offensive line. And I think that you look at all the other pieces, it's all there to be successful, but the offensive line is just so important. Like that's a, you win and lose games there. And so I the most intriguing part about it for me is you have a coach in Bill Beanbow who has made a career out of developing guys. He's made a career out of taking 3-star and 4-star guys and turning them into first round, second round, third round draft picks. And I think that this is potentially going to be, he may have to do his best job yet this year. Just considering what Oklahoma is facing on the schedule, considering what Oklahoma has to overcome as far as the turnover at that position, I think this is probably his steepest task to date for what he needs to put together. But all that to be said, I think the pieces that he has are more than capable of being a good offensive line. I really like what Oklahoma's got in the transfer portal. I think they got the right pieces. I think that, you know, is this a Joe Moore award winning group? I don't think anybody is going to say that, but I also think that given the talent around them and given the coach that they have, that's going to help them develop, I don't think there's any reason to believe that this unit is going to be atrocious or not be able to run the football. Like that's just, I just don't see that out of a group with Bill Beanbow at the helm. So it's intriguing and it's definitely going to be the position to watch. There's no doubt. I think that's going to be where everybody's eyes kind of run to as we build into spring here and eventually towards the summer. But yeah, I mean, I think that that's going to be something to watch, but I don't necessarily feel bad about it, if that makes sense.
I kind of wonder if the offensive line is going to end up just being kind of a hodgepodge of different guys.
Potentially, yeah.
You know, just because there's so many combinations and so many ways this thing could go, but it's, you know, when you look at the transfers, whether that's, you know, Spencer Brown or Fabechi Nwewu, Michael Tarquin, it's interesting because they get, like you said, like I think those transfer guys, they have a ton of experience, especially Tarquin, who played at USC last year. He's heading into his last year of eligibility. Then you mentioned some of the guys that were on the team last year, Jake Taylor and Heath Ozeda and Logan Howland and Josh Bates, Jacob Sexton, yep. You know, Troy Everett. I just, to me, it's obvious that it's, like you said, that it's the position group to watch that has the most question marks. But part of it is intriguing because you could tell me like a bunch of different ways this shakes out. You could tell me a bunch of different combinations that, oh, it's going to be these five guys. And I'd be like, yep. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
And so I think open practices in particular are going to be interesting to see who's in that first group and, you know, during individual drills. Who is, and also, because so basically it's about not only finding the best guys, but what group of guys work the best together.
Right. Who gels?
Yeah, who gels? Yep. And they haven't really had to almost start from scratch like this before. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and Brent, I obviously expressed his excitement for that group, but he said getting those guys all to mesh quickly is the charge of Coach Beanbow. That's probably the position that everybody knows if you follow Oklahoma football, where we lost the most experience on the team. That's the group we have to replace. So, I mean, and Brent wasn't asked specifically about the offensive line. He was asked, where do we need to develop? Where does Oklahoma need to develop depth? And that was immediately his answer.
Yep.
So, and then as far as, I'll tell you the position group that intrigues me is wide receiver.
Mm, yep.
Because it's arguably the position group with the most depth, arguably, on either side of the ball. But again, it's kind of, it's coming from a better position than the offensive line. But I kind of want to know how all that's going to shake out, because you're losing Drake Stoops. But, you know, I got to talk to Deion Burks for a little bit yesterday. He's a, not only a great interview, but he is bigger than I, like, he's huge. He's huge. Yeah. And, you know, I, you know, he played a lot of, he played a lot out wide at Purdue, but I think he's been brought in with the idea of playing the slot, or primarily playing the slot. But Jaden Gibson didn't get a ton of snaps last year, proved that he probably should be on the field a lot more. Nick Anderson broke out and is easily at probably the top of the list of breakout candidates heading into next year. It, to me, it's almost kind of the same thing. Like, it's not only about finding the best guys and finding which guys make the most sense within Seth Luttrell's scheme, but also think about what guys have the best chemistry together.
Yeah.
You know, I, maybe not a lot of question marks for that group, but I think it's one of the most intriguing to watch.
Sure. Yeah, that's, you know, it and it really depends on who meshes well with Jackson and who he builds a rapport with. But I mean, you just named off all those guys, and we didn't even mention Andrew Anthony coming back. We didn't mention Jalil Farouk is back.
Jaquais Petaway.
Jaquais Petaway, is he going to get in? You've got Zion Kearney in the fold now. I mean, there's so much, there's so much talent there at that position. And it's good, you know, especially with an offense that's going to try and stretch the field to counter the runs and zone stuff that they're using. And the two tight end sets are going to make things a little more difficult to get guys snaps at that position. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that all plays out, because I mean, you think about it, in most instances, you're going to have two wide receivers, maybe three on the field at most, for what Oklahoma is going to be doing moving forward. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. That's, there's a lot of talent and a lot of experience coming back from that, from last season, and the new guys in that room are, you know, Deion Burks. I'm so excited about seeing him in the slot. All you got to do is turn on 20 seconds of his film at Purdue and realize that he's a special athlete. So, you know, you getting him the ball in space, but also having Nick Anderson and Jaden Gibson over the top. And hey, there's just so many possibilities. I think that, like you said, I don't think maybe question mark is the right word, but I think what ingredients go into this mixture to make it pop? Like who's the best culmination of guys to make the offense really take the next step? And that's going to be fun to watch.
Is it, like, I'm thinking about, it's funny, I was going through the numbers yesterday or a couple of days ago from last season, specifically looking at the receivers and their snaps. And, you know, Jeff Lebby and this coaching staff primarily played three guys. It was Andrell, Drake, and Jalil. Mm-hmm. And Andrell got hurt, and Nick Anderson took Andrell's spot. But it was primarily those three guys.
Yeah.
Like the bulk of the snaps. In the Alamo Bowl, it was those three guys and Jaden Gibson that saw a ton of snaps. Jaden Gibson saw like 44 snaps, according to Pro Football Focus. He hadn't played more than like 24 all year.
That's great.
So I do wonder if there is going to be less reliance on a quote unquote top three. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, it's like Nick, like Jaden Gibson saw fewer snaps than Andrell Anthony last year in total. And Andrell missed half the year.
Right.
Which crazy. Is kind of crazy to think about.
Especially when you think about how much of an impact Gibson played whenever he was in the game.
14 catches.
That's nuts. That doesn't seem right, because every single one of those catches was big. Like something big happened.
But he was noticeably on the field more in the Alamo Bowl.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's, so I do wonder from that perspective. And obviously, I think there's going to be a shift in the kind of formations OU runs and the types of plays, less reliance on RPOs and stuff. But I, you know, there's not enough playing time for everybody in that room.
Nope.
With all that being said, there's not. Like, are we looking at a reality where we get to the end of the year and Jaquez Petaway's barely played?
Yes.
Are we looking at a reality? Yeah. Or we get to the end of the year and Jaden Gibson didn't play that much.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and this is just kind of, it's a sad reality of the era of the transfer portal. But that's, you know, I think that is, that's a byproduct of building elite talent, like in at position groups. I think what you've seen Oklahoma do at that position group, there's really not very many collections of wide receiver talent out there in the country that you put next to Oklahoma's and they outclass Oklahoma. Like, there's just not. And so I think that it's a big deal. What Emmett Jones has done there has been incredible, but I think you're going to have to get used to that being the case of, you know, the former four-star, five-star guy that you were really excited about, maybe not getting on the field as early as he wants to and taking his talent elsewhere. That you see that happen at the other major programs. And, you know, I think Oklahoma certainly, they're doing their best to build a culture where that's not the case. But yeah, when you have that many guys that could be difference makers, it's going to be tough to get everybody snaps. And at the end of the day, guys are in college football to play college football.
Any concerns about the tight end room heading into the spring?
I don't think concern would be the right word for me. I mean, I think year over year, that might be the room that has gained the most, as far as what it looked like last year versus what my expectations are for going into this year. Because, I mean, we've had this discussion on this podcast. We've had this discussion off air, and not just amongst the two of us, but several people, is if Austin Stogner wasn't in the game last year, I mean, the tight end position was a moot point for Oklahoma last year. I mean, it just was. And he was really the only guy that you could tell the staff really trusted to put out there in situations. And so I think with that being the case, having some of the new guys that you have in there, having Roberts in there and Bauer Sharp, who I'm personally really excited about, Devon Mitchell brings it in. Caden Helms, hopefully, is getting healthy enough to be back in the fold at some point.
Brent said he's going to be limited during the spring.
Yeah. Well, that's better than nothing. He's just had such a hard time staying healthy. But that group as a whole, I think, is in a much better spot now than it was a year ago. I don't know. I'm curious. I'm really curious because when I look at Bauer Sharp, I see him as an extension of a wide receiver. I don't really see him as an inline tight end, but I think Taylor or Roberts fits that mold of a guy that you have as an extension of the offensive line. So I think you have multiple guys that can and bring in new different things to that room. And I think it's more versatile than it was. So concerns, probably not, but I hate to use intrigue again, but I think that's a very intriguing room. I'm curious to see what comes of it, because having a good tight end or having two good tight ends is the best friend of a young and developing quarterback. And that's exactly what Oklahoma's got. So yeah, it's going to be an important room and something I'll be watching for sure.
You had to look at the defensive side of the ball. What position group intrigues you the most, either in a good way or in a, there's a lot to prove type of way? For me, you know, while there's some young guys at safety, both freshmen and, you know, returning guys that I'm excited to see, we kind of know what the safety room, right, is going to look. It's going to be Billy Bowman and Peyton Bowen.
Yeah.
Probably.
Or RSJ.
Yeah. Absolutely. But we kind of know who's at the, I should have said, we know who's going to be at the top of the depth chart, more than likely. Yep. At cornerback, we kind of know, I mean, we know what that's going to look like with Woody Washington and Gentry Williams and, you know, Kenai Walker, other guys that are going to be in that room. And you know, and we kind of know what those look like. Linebacker, outside of, you know, does Kip Lewis hang on to that middle linebacker spot, or can Jaron Kanick get back in the mix?
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's defensive tackle. That's the most interesting to me, especially with the news that Jacob Lacy is medically retiring.
Oh, yeah.
And you're losing a starter there. Now, you've got some guys that are coming back, you know, Deshaun Terry and Grayson Halton and you know, other, you know, a bunch of guys. I'm particularly curious, not only because you basically got to replace a starter, but, can David Stone and Jaden Jackson, can those guys get into the fold? Brent talked about them yesterday. Basically said that, you know, that they've got a lot of ways that they can develop. Jaden's going to start at nose guard, or not start at nose guard, but that's what he's primarily going to be playing. But yeah, to me, defensive line might be the hardest place for freshmen to see playing time, but I don't know. Defensive tackle is probably the most intriguing to me because I think there's a lot of things they got to work out. If you had to pick a position group, what would it be?
It's probably boring, but I think that's where the intrigue is there, and maybe defensive end. But I want to start right there on the interior. You know, losing Jacob Lacy is tough. I mean, there's no two ways about it. That's a tough loss. The experience that he had, it's something, you know, interior defensive linemen don't get a lot of credit for some of the things that they do, because it doesn't really show up on the stat sheet as far as what they do from a tackles perspective or from a tackles for loss perspective. I mean, you can have Tavondre Sweat is a perfect example of what he did at Texas. I mean, his stats didn't just blow you away, but there is no doubt that he is one of the reasons why they had a top three rushing defense this last year. And I think that, you know, it's important, as you noted, that Jaden Jackson's going to be playing nose guard. I think that when you look at a defensive scheme, your three tech is typically your most like physically imposing defensive lineman. And I think that's where David Stone sets up. I think that's where he ends up making a role for himself. Speaking with somebody a couple of weeks ago, it was pretty clear that Stone going through bag drills and just being amongst those other guys, even though he's a freshman, man, he's still different. Like, there's just a step. There's something
he's
different
huge
about that guy. And, you know, I expect him to play a big role, but I also think it's going to be vital that Oklahoma adds another body, like another experienced body in this, in the upcoming transfer portal cycle after the spring is over. They need somebody with some more experience, because, you know, you can throw those freshmen in and see how they do. And they very well may, you know, transition very well, just considering how good both of those guys are. But with Lacy being out, you need Ashton Sanders to step it up in a big way. You need Grayson Halton to be ready to be a dude this year. I'm not really concerned about Deshaun Terry. I think he's going to have a great year.
I thought he played pretty well, especially towards the end of last year.
I thought he did really well. And, you know, that I think you need that. It's really important to have good rotational depth at that position, particularly because every single play, you know, safeties sometimes get a playoff, corners sometimes get a playoff. If it's a running play, you know, Brent Venables would choke me out if he heard me say that. But, you know, sometimes you get a playoff. When you're an interior defensive lineman, you got to bang every play. I mean, you literally every single play is full out. Like you're being pushed on. So,
They were rotating like five or six guys into every game.
Yeah.
at defensive tackle.
You have to, especially in the league they're going into. I mean, it's going to be so physical. So they need to go out and get some other guys, but I'm intrigued with that. And then on the defensive end position, Caden Woolard, I'm really excited to see what he brings.
I am too.
But I want to see what PJ looks like after last year. PJ, hold on. PJ Adebowara.
Good enough.
Adebowara? Is it Adebowara?
Adebowara.
Eddie Bowery. Anyways, I'm excited to see what 34 looks like, man. I think him and R. Mason Thomas and Trace Ford and Woolard, I think it's a good group. And then, you know, obviously Ethan Downs is back. So I like that group. I'm ready to see what they look like. But, that defensive line, man, that interior is going to be fun to watch.
Wyatt Gilmore, actually one of the freshman defensive end. I talked to him for a little bit yesterday, and he actually mentioned Ethan Downs specifically as the guy that not only has really taken leadership of that room, but he said that he's the guy that he's leaned on since he's been on campus. And that, you know, so that was pretty neat. But yeah, in the backdrop, of course, of all this, Brian, is they're heading to the SEC, which Brent referred to as the most unforgiving conference on the planet.
It is.
Yeah. And it is. So that takes all of these discussions and how important they already are and turns it up to 11 a little bit. But spring football starts on March 11th. It's crazy. It does not feel like we had 2.5 months of an off season.
No.
What the hell, man?
I don't know. It's almost time to start going again. And we've got, you know, softball and basketball's heated up. It's just a ton going on right now.
You mentioned softball. Let's close things out here just to talk briefly about what was an eventful weekend at Love's Field, the program's new stadium. You and I were both there on Friday. You shot some great video for OU Insider's YouTube channel. And, you know, I think there's a lot we could talk about. Obviously, they lost their first game in 72 tries on Sunday against Louisiana, a team that they had smacked around quite a bit earlier in the weekend. But while the most important thing obviously was the results on the field for OU, and that's the way they'll think of it, this last weekend was bigger than that. Oh, yeah. And just from anybody that hasn't gotten to actually be at Love's Field yet, Brian, I don't know about you, but that it's incredible. And I was there again last night for their game against Texas A&M Commerce. And it's not even done yet. They're still working on it. But, Brian, it's incredible.
When that stadium is complete, there will not be a better venue. Respectively, with everything that Owen Field obviously has going for it for the football program, I don't think there's going to be another softball stadium in the country on a campus that's going to stand toe-to-toe with what Oklahoma has at Love's Field. It's just incredible. I mean, and I think you and I were the ones that had this discussion last week. If you never went to Merida Hines for a game, you need to find the times. If that ever happens again where they go back and play at Merida Hines or – you need to go and try and catch one of those games just to have perspective, because if the only game you've ever witnessed or been to was in Oklahoma City during the Women's College World Series, it's a comparable feeling. But
yeah.
I don't think you realize how big of a deal that is, that an on-campus game has the same feeling as the Women's College World Series. Like it's incredible. Love's Field is, it's one hell of a venue, man. Like it's awesome. It's really, really good. I like the old school feel, like the pennants and the, you know, it almost has like that Wrigley Field kind of feel to it with the green and it's just incredible, man. The old time scoreboards up underneath the venue. It's just great. It's really, really cool.
The Oklahoma shaped scoreboard is rad.
Yeah.
It's just rad. I didn't know what I was really going to think of it. I know it looked great, but I was wondering, is it, it seems kind of gimmicky. That was kind of my thought going into it.
Yeah.
No, it's incredible. It's amazing.
The use of the innings in the panhandle is just like, I thought that that's what they were going to do. And now that I've seen it in action, it's like, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it really is. And you mentioned it, man, like, and they talked about it after those games. Those games had a World Series feel. And even last night against Texas A&M Commerce had a World Series feel. And you're right. That is not the norm for not only a on-campus regular season game, but a non-conference late February, early March game. That's not normal. It's just not. And there was a lot of things about the weekend. I mean, that was their first time on the field, was the first game.
Yep.
They can't even do all their warm-ups yet on Love's Field. And the field plays differently. They talked about that a little bit, not from an excuse standpoint, but, you know, the way the wind affects, you know, balls in the air has an effect. Yep. The way the ball hits the grass and the dirt has a different impact. And also it was just, you know, with the ceremony they had beforehand, before the first game and all the people that were there, you know, I thought OU handled that pretty well for the most part, the first couple of days, but I think you saw on Sunday, it was, you know, you have to give Louisiana credit for one.
Sure.
They played really well and made plays when it looked like OU was going to storm back and win it. Louisiana made plays. Mm-hmm. But OU also made a lot of mistakes they don't typically make. And I think you saw the culmination of all of the emotions and all the newness and everything kind of wrapped up into one. And I don't think there's a concern level there. I don't think either of us have a concern level about that game. I will say, Brian, that to get your take on this, I was pretty interested, you know, because last night's game was there. OU opens the game with 5 runs in the first inning, and you know right away this is not going to be a close game. And OU won that game 9-0, most ho-hum run rule you could ever see. I thought it was pretty interesting what Patty said after the game, because she mentioned that, you know, they needed this game. They needed to get, you know, to move on from last weekend and stuff like that. But she said, we need more relentlessness for this team. I wasn't really pleased with the way the game ended for us offensively. It's unacceptable for this team. It's underachieving for this team. It's not understanding the situation and circumstance for this team. That's saying we, this isn't normal regular season growth. These are things we have to do better right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting from, you know, with Iowa State coming to town this weekend. So OU starts conference play, but I do wonder, and look, we are still in early March, but I do wonder if there's any team that's under the benefit of the doubt, it's Oklahoma. They're 19-1, right? There's no real reason to worry about them, but I do get this sense that Patty is really pushing this team. And it's not just because of the loss, but it's because there have been moments, even think about Friday, where they give up back-to-back-to-back home runs in that first game in the 7th inning. And all of a sudden, it goes from a 7-3 lead to a 7-7 tie.
Yeah.
We were even talking in the press box, like, when's the last time Oklahoma gave up back-to-back-to-back home runs? When's that ever happened? And you look at, I think there were a couple other innings over the weekend that weren't great, and then that Louisiana game where it just looked like they were completely out of sync.
Mm-hmm.
And they did kind of feel that game last night as those last couple innings. Like, it's hard. It's a midweek game against an opponent they should beat easily. But I do think there was a lack of drive to some perspective, you know, in some instances. Yeah. I don't know. Do you give any credence to that? Or is this just unnecessary drama that is going to be blown away when OU beats Iowa State 50-0 this weekend?
Well, I want to preface this by saying Iowa State's lost 6 of 8, and they got swept by Colorado State and Delaware in that stretch. So, you know, Iowa State isn't necessarily the best team Oklahoma's going to face in conference play, but, you know, it is a Big 12 opponent. So, you know, there needs to be a certain level of respect there. With that being said, I do think that there's some credence to what you're saying, because it does seem like there have been moments in time this year where that killer instinct hasn't been there. It does seem like some teams are able to hang around a little longer than they maybe should, or Oklahoma is not just putting that exclamation point on an offensive performance. You know, it almost feels like last year or in previous years where Oklahoma was really hitting on all cylinders, it wasn't 8-0. It was 13-0. It was, you know, 17-0, 14-0. It's almost as if they reach that point and that's enough. Like, they're content. And what I think Patty is probably getting at is that's not going to be enough against Texas. That's not going to be enough against Oklahoma State or against LSU or, you know, whoever you face off against in super regionals. You're going to need to be able to hit that extra gear. And if you're not doing that in the regular season, it doesn't matter how good you are. You can't just flip that switch and turn it on when competition finally arises. You've got to prepare for that. And so I think it is important that this team kind of takes what she's saying and runs with it. And I'm sure she's plenty candid with us, but I'm sure that there's even more push behind the scenes on that too. You know, with this group, with as many seniors, as much experience as there is on this team, I have no doubt that they're mirroring what their coach is saying in practice, and that they're taking that with the right mentality. So it's just a matter of getting it all put together. And, you know, I'll just close with this. 3 errors against Louisiana in that game that they lost.
And it felt like a lot more.
It did. And I think that there was a couple of plays that could have been scored errors, but they weren't. It just didn't look like what we've seen from Oklahoma. It didn't look like Oklahoma softball. Was that just the end of a crazy weekend and very emotional and all, you know, maybe. I think that probably plays a part in it. But I think maybe moving on from that weekend is probably the best thing that can happen for Oklahoma. It's a huge deal to be playing in a new ballpark. It's very exciting. But at some point, that just has to become another part of the process. And I think that's going to be big for Oklahoma. They got to take advantage of this weekend and capitalize and move forward.
Spring football on March 11th. Big 12 softball play or conference play starts this weekend. OU men's basketball ends their regular season on Saturday at Texas. The OU women's team, the number one seeded OU women's team, plays in the Big 12 tournament this weekend. They'll get the winner of Oklahoma State and TCU. And continuing what's been an incredible year for Jenny Baranchuk and the Sooners. A lot of stuff going on, man. And obviously, top of that list is spring football and heading into what is going to be one of the most consequential years in OU football history. There's a lot of stuff we're going to be able to talk about and cover and write about and dissect and analyze and all that stuff over the coming weeks. There is no better place for anybody out there to do that over at OUinsider.com. Become a VIP member today. You're going to get all kinds of content that you don't want to miss. And if nothing else, make sure you hit the like and subscribe button over at our OU Insider YouTube channel. There's tons of YouTube exclusive content that you're not going to want to miss either. It's an exciting time. A lot of stuff going on. Make sure to tune into OU Insider. And until then, Brian and I will be back with you guys next week on the Oklahoma Drill.